Genealogy by Tim, Season 6, Episode 2, recorded February 21st, 2026. I'm Tim of genealogybytim.com. You can email me at tim@genealogybytim.com, and this is what I have been doing in genealogy this month. First, an interview opportunity in York, Pennsylvania has led to some snowy gravestone photographs at the Prospect Hill Cemetery there. This is of the Schmidt family and descendants. And secondly, a pair of marriage records from Delaware County, Pennsylvania has renewed interest in Anflick family research. Those topics and more coming up on Genealogy by Tim. I was out in New York, Pennsylvania twice this month to interview for a computer science and STEM teaching position at the York Academy Regional Charter School. Although I ultimately wasn't offered the position, I had a great time out there, both during the interviews and after the first interview, when I paid a visit to the Prospect Hill Cemetery, which is just a few blocks north of the school. I stopped by the cemetery to photograph gravestones of the Schmidt family and descendants. This is a pretty distant relationship, though not too far from the Wetton family that I was researching prior to last month's podcast. It's on my paternal grandmother's side. My paternal grandmother's Joan Barbara Harrison. Her great-grandfather was William Pickersgill Harrison, who married Harriet Atwood in 1869. Harriet Atwood had three sisters, one of whom was Anne Atwood, who married Charles Wetton and moved out to Elizabeth, New Jersey. And they were the subject of last month's podcast. This month I'm focusing on a different sister's descendants. This is Elizabeth Amelia Atwood, who married a Dennis Hawkins in 1868. Elizabeth Atwood and Dennis Hawkins had one son together, Russell M. Hawkins. And his story is a very interesting one, kind of a rags-to-riches story. I wrote a piece on him back in 2014, which is still up on my legacy blog. This was the first installment of the 52 Ancestors series of that year. I never did get around to finishing that series, but it started off very well with this piece on Russell Hawkins. So what happened in this family was that Dennis Hawkins, a native of New York, moved down to the Philadelphia area during the Civil War and fought in the Civil War. He had a wife in New York, the former Miss Mary B. Drake. They had a son together in New York. And Mary died shortly thereafter in 1864. When Dennis moved down to Philadelphia during the Civil War, he met and married Elizabeth Atwood. They had a son, Russell Hawkins, who was born in 1870. In 1873, Dennis Hawkins died during a business trip in West Virginia, leaving Elizabeth to raise Russell on her own. I knew from census records that Russell attended the Girard College, which was a school for orphan and destitute young boys when it was founded. So I knew that the family was not doing very well, and he seemed to have disappeared from the census records at a young age, and I always wondered what happened to him. I found out later that Russell did pretty well for himself. When his mother was applying for a widow's Civil War pension, Russell wrote in support of his mother to the pension board on stationery of the Bartram Hotel in Philadelphia. Turns out he was the manager of the Bartram Hotel, and from there his professional accolades grew. He was, for a time, the vice president of the Diamond Match Company, which still exists today, and this was around the turn of the 20th century, the late 1800s. And this job brought him prestige around the world as he assisted the Japanese government in organizing its match industry. In 1902, Russell married Helen Smicer, and the family moved to New York, where they lived for a short time. And around 1907, Russell took his family to Portland, Oregon, and later to Tillamook, where he was the founder of the Whitney Lumber Company. He was a bit of a timber magnate out there, and after a certain amount of success in this industry, he was appointed by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt to the Federal Home Loan Bank Board. He contributed to the first annual report of the board, before dying unexpectedly of a heart attack in 1934. He was 63 years old at the time. So Russell Hawkins was a very important person in my family tree. If you visit my family tree at webtrees.genealogybytim.com, you'll see him listed there as one of my favorites. He did actually marry twice. First, he married Alina A. Ryan in 1895. They had a son, Russell Hawkins Jr., who was born in 1898 and died in 1989. It's with his second wife, Helen Smicer, whom he married in 1902, that he had a daughter, Margaret Hawkins. It was Margaret Hawkins who moved out to York, Pennsylvania, from the West Coast, where she married Henry D. Schmidt, who was born in 1896 and died in 1978. And this is the family that is buried in the Prospect Hill Cemetery in York, Pennsylvania. Russell himself was buried in the Woodward Hill Cemetery in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Actually, the city of Lancaster. And I always thought that was kind of an odd placement and wondered quite how that turned out to be. He was born in Philadelphia, moved to New York for a while, did most of his career work out in the West Coast, Oregon. After his appointment by President Roosevelt, he worked for the Federal Home Loan Bank Board in Washington, D.C. He died in Washington, D.C., but then was buried in Lancaster. I do have pictures of his gravestone there. I took them during one of my more recent trips. But his daughter, Margaret, who married Henry D. Schmidt, lived in York, Pennsylvania. They died there and are buried in the Prospect Hill Cemetery in York. And since I happen to be out in York on my job interviews, I thought, why not try to find the graves of Henry D. Schmidt, his wife Margaret, and their daughter, Helen Margaret Schmidt, who was born in 1927 and died in 1992. Now, the obstacle here to finding these graves was the lingering snow. We had about 8 to 10 inches fall in the southeastern Pennsylvania area. Unfortunately, I had find-a-grave photos to guide me to the grave sites, so I knew pretty much what I was looking for. I was able to find the Schmidt Monument pretty easily, but the lot had footstones that were covered by snow, and I didn't take the time to clear the snow away and take pictures. I left the snow pretty much as undisturbed as I could, and I was able to get some very nice snowy pictures of this grave, which I'll post in the show notes. Now, their daughter, Helen Margaret Schmidt, married a Samuel H. Shipley Jr. Their monument was on the other end of the cemetery. Not quite as impressive, but pretty easy to find along a row of trees. And their monument, too, has several flat headstones surrounding it, which were impossible to find in the snow. Again, I did not dig around in the snow looking for these. I just said, look, I'll just find the area. I'll grab the GPS coordinates. If I want to come back at a later time, I can. So I got what I would consider to be a rarity in my genealogy photo collection, and that is snowy grave sites. I typically don't go out to grave sites in the snow because you don't get to see the full context of the site. You don't get to see gravestones that are buried under the snow. But in this instance, I happened to be out for my job interviews while the snow was on the ground, so there really wasn't any other better time. So I went out there with my camera, snapped some photos, and I think they turned out pretty well. You can check them out in the show notes. Now, Henry D. Schmidt was a prominent Yorker. I can read from his obituary in the York Daily Record of September 29th, 1978. This is on newspapers.com. I'll just read some of the beginning part here. It says, Henry D. Schmidt, head of the former Schmidt and Alt Paper Company, died Thursday at 4:30 a.m. at his home, 144 Marion Road, husband of the late Margaret Hawkins Schmidt. He was 86. So Margaret died in 1977. Henry followed the next year. Continuing on with the obituary, it says, Mr. Schmidt was president and treasurer of the paper firm from 1923 until his promotion to division chairman in August 1962. He was elected to the paper board of St. Regis Paper Company in 1960 following his firm's merger with St. Regis. He served as a director until 1975. He was currently serving as a director of the York Bank and Trust Company. And later in the obituary it says that he served in World War I as an army officer in aircraft production. He was past president of the National Paperboard Association and the Manufacturers Association of York. He was active in civic and charitable affairs and was a founder of Junior Achievement of York County and the York Foundation. Continuing in the obituary, it says Mr. Schmidt held an honorary doctorate of humane letters, received from York College of Pennsylvania in 1974. Survivors are listed in the obituary and include John C. Schmidt and Helen Shipley, the latter of whom's grave I photographed. But John C. Schmidt continued in the paper industry, and the Schmidt Library at the York College of Pennsylvania is named after John C. Schmidt. And I knew about this. I knew about the library being named after a Schmidt. So when I took that interview in York at the York Academy Regional Charter School, I said, you know what? I've got people in York, don't I? Let's take a look and see if I can do any genealogy while I'm out there. And that I did. And you can see the resulting photographs in the show notes. Now that I feel like I've maybe had my fill of Wetton and Schmidt research, I'm feeling like getting back to completing my application for the Pennsylvania Ancestors Lineage Society, for the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. And part of doing that is I had to get some primary documents on my parents, that is, some birth and marriage records. And they were very helpful in providing those documents on condition that I don't post them and don't disclose details about them. Now, I did at one point attempt a public record search for the marriage document, and that turned out not to bear any fruit, but I was impressed with the website of the Delaware County Register of Wills and Clerk of Orphans Court. They have a easy marriage license search. And to my knowledge, the marriage records that you'll find there are not, at least yet, available on FamilySearch.org. And since Delaware County is right outside of Philadelphia, it's not unheard of for some people in my family tree to get married, you know, just outside the border of Philadelphia. So I said, you know what, this is such a cool website. Why don't I just start plugging in some names here? See who comes up. My mother's maiden name, Anflick, is pretty rare. And if I type that in, I figure, hey, pretty much anyone who shows up is going to be a relative. I did find there two marriage license applications, both of them pretty interesting to me. So I placed the online orders, and those documents were mailed to me pretty quickly at a fee of $2 each, very affordable. And this was several months ago. This was before the new year. And, you know, my apartment can be a mess sometimes. Can't really blame the apartment for that. It's really my fault. I'm not that well organized sometimes with papers. Those documents were kind of sitting on my printer for several weeks. I finally got around to scanning them. So they're ready for me to process and put in my family tree. The marriage documents are as follows. First, Sidney Anflick married Marilyn Merle in Upper Providence, Delaware County, on the 31st of August, 1931. And after living in Philadelphia for a little while, the couple moved their family out to California, out to the West Coast, where many of his descendants are active on Facebook, and we've connected with them through a Facebook group that I've started and called the Descendants of Katie Anflick. So they may be interested to see this document. Sidney's wife is most commonly known as Mona Merlinski. The name is Marilyn Merle on this marriage document. And the dates are, well, the dates of birth are earlier than what is commonly known and accepted, and I suspect the reason for this is that the couple was very young when they were married. So here I'm thinking they're trying to avoid certain age requirements. They've got a birth date of October 5th, 1909 for Sidney, and a birth date of April 25th, 1910 for Marilyn, also known as Mona. Sidney was actually born in 1913, to the best of my knowledge, and Marilyn was born in 1915. So I believe they were minors when they were married, and they engaged in a little bit of a subterfuge here to get this marriage license issued. But eventually it was, and that marriage lasted until their death. Sydney died in 1970, Mona died in 1975. But that's one document that some people I am in touch with on Facebook might find interesting. The other document is the marriage license application of June Ann Flick to Joseph M. Castrataro. Now here's an interesting story that my grandfather, Morris Ann Flick, was married to my grandmother, Betty Scoletto, in 1960. And I didn't know growing up that my grandfather had a first wife, and I discovered that through doing research on FamilySearch.org. And I got to wondering, do I have any half-uncles out there from this first marriage? But people who were alive at the time, like my mom's cousin and my uncle, told me that there was no child from this first marriage. My grandfather married a June Stone in 1947. But that marriage lasted until 1951, according to this new marriage document. June Stone, still going by the name of June Ann Flick at the time, remarried Joseph M. Castrataro on the 16th day of October, 1951. Now here's the deal with this first wife of my grandfather. I've been trying to find out what happened to her. According to her initial marriage license application to my grandfather, she was a model. I'm kind of interested to see a picture of this model, but I've never found one. And I don't know what became of her. It's quite a mystery for some time, but finding this marriage license application kind of introduced a new lead that maybe I could eventually find out what happened to this Miss June Ann Flick. She was born January 26, 1929, which would make her 97 years of age if she were alive today. Probably unlikely, but not unheard of. And I've been searching for her under her maiden name, June Stone, under her married name, June Ann Flick, but this document gave me a clue. She remarried, and her name was presumably changed to June Castrataro. So I had a lead for a little while. Did some newspapers.com searches for June Ann Flick, June Stone, June Castrataro, and what I discovered was that in 1960, Joseph M. Castrataro was divorced from June S.A. This is from the May 4th, 1960 edition of the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm assuming that S.A. stands for Stone Ann Flick. And I'm not quite sure. The trail runs cold again. I'm not quite sure if June remarried again or if she reverted to one of her prior names. But the trail ran cold again, and this is, you know, kind of an interesting advancement in the saga of Miss June. And maybe one day the mystery will be solved, possibly through further newspaper searches, marriage searches, and whatnot. But yes, some interesting stuff discovered through the website of the Register of Wills and Clerk of Orphans Court, Marriage Licenses and Records Division. And that just about does it for this month. It's about all I have for you. Like I said, this morning I woke up and I said, you know what? I think it's about time I revisit my application for the Pennsylvania Ancestors Lineage Society. I took a break from that toward the end of last year when the society redesigned their application for PALS. I liked the new application. I think the redesign is an improvement, but once you realize you gotta like redo something, it's always like, oh gosh, I gotta redo all this. But take a break from it, do some other things, come back, return refreshed and ready to go. So I would expect next month's podcast will be all about my revisited application for PALS. With any luck, it'll be ready for submission by next month's meeting of the second Saturday roundtable discussion at the Society. We'll see. We'll see. If not then quite possibly the following month. And you'll hear about it on this podcast. Until then, I've been Tim, genealogybytim.com. Tim@genealogybytim.com for the email. And as always, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits.